the state Supreme Court and the state bar of Wisconsin. Students from around the state are invited to join us for an oral argument, and if the invitation is accepted, we send them briefs in the case, which the students will listen. And the students may have engaged in other activities relating to this case. And at noon, the students will meet with a justice of the Supreme Court. Everybody is welcome to the meeting at noon. The subject of the meeting is the procedure of the court, not the substantive issues involved in the case. Now that we have met the students, let me introduce the students to the court. On my far left is Justice Annette Ziegler. Seated next to her is Justice Patience Rogensack. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, and to her right, Justice David Prosser, and on the far right, Justice Lewis Butler. With those introductions made, I should tell you, you are going to be meeting today with Justice Crooks. He is the assigned justice, and you will have students joining you from other schools who will be here for the second oral argument. With that, I will call the first case for this morning, Town of Rhine versus Brock O. Bizzell et al. 25 minutes are allotted to attorney, is it Sincotta or Chincotta? Sincotta, representing the Town of Rhine. And then we have 23 minutes for attorney Lambert, representing Brock O. Bizzell et al. And 7 minutes for attorney John A. Castor, representing the Realtors Association. And then, Mr. Sincotta, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Agreed upon? You may proceed, counsel.
Thank you, Ms. Chief Justice. Justices, good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Joe Sincotta. I am a private attorney. I represent the Town of Rhine in this matter. Also with me today and on the briefs is Attorney Paul Dirksey at council table from the Sheboygan office of the O'Neill Cannon firm. As the court knows, this case came from Judge Langhoff in Sheboygan County and then went through the Court of Appeals. We had oral argument, and it's been certified here. If I might, the Town of Rhine, initially, just a bit of the setting here, is in Sheboygan County. It's a community of 1,700 residents. It's not, I think when we hear town, sometimes we think of very rural. Certainly there are those areas, but this is a pretty thriving community with a fairly sophisticated municipal government. It has adopted village powers. I think that's important that we understand that, and we can get into more of that as well. The basic facts, which the court may be familiar with, is that the former gravel pit property at issue, which is, I think, been purchased essentially by what I'll call the club, which is a club that does off-road riding of ATVs and such, has been operating there at that site and driving motorcycles and other recreational-type machines. But it's not really a recreational use. Their focus is to use this on a pretty heavy basis. And if I might, my little flourish on the sort of the audible, the oral sensation here of what we're talking about. If we think primarily of motorcycles, this is not the sort of the distant thunder of the Harley Davidson. This is off-road lightweight motorcycles with small engines that whine. And it certainly is fun to do, I'm sure, but it's a whining noise that you're going to get as they accelerate up and down the irregular terrain of the gravel pit.
Sounds like fun, huh?
It can be some fun, I admit. I think it can also be, if we can envision it, pretty annoying, and that's fine, and we can address that. And I will address how that fits in. But the geographic proximity I want to address quickly as well. There's been some confusion in the briefs about the distances. It is a former gravel pit property. It's a fairly sizable parcel. But the surrounding area has become, you know, for purposes of the town, somewhat of a community with a number of residents. The Moorings, the Mooring residents, I believe their home is about 150 feet away from the property line. And the machines go fairly close to that property line. I think the other homes are a bit further away. I think 1,000 yards was used. I think it's actually 1,000 feet for another neighbor, and one maybe a bit closer. But the testimony below was that the sound is very apparent and very much a factor. The case came up with the club purchasing the property and beginning to use it, and the complaints occurring. And then, and this is now getting into what happened, there's two tracks here. The town issued citations under its noise ordinance, saying that the noise was too much. It was, the hours were bad. It was annoying to the neighbors. And under the well-established and long-standing ordinance, they issued citations for public nuisance violating the noise ordinance. They also informed the club that they were actually using the property contrary to the zoning. And so those are two separate tracks here we're dealing with in this case.
Council, can I ask you a quick question? For B2 classification, if I want to go buy a parcel and it's classified B2, when I'm purchasing it, what do I know I can do with that parcel?
Here's what you do, and this is a good point because we have this come up in the briefs, and the Court of Appeals says, geez, how do I know what to do? And I'll cite to a couple cases first. The Skelly case, which is an older case that dealt with conditional use permits, actually in that case talks about the landowner who bought the property getting the conditional use a part of the deal. You read the ordinance, the owner of the property perhaps, and the buyer, and you say, okay, I need a conditional use permit. And the fact that you need that and you need to go forward with some information is a very manageable thing and occurs, you know, actually not infrequently. I was actually here at the court on another case, a gravel pit case out of Washburn County, the Osterhuis case. This is the very same situation. The county bought the property conditioned on them achieving the conditional use permit. That's how you manage it mechanically. What do you give them? And that gets into the guts of the case. Under the ordinance in this...
Let me just ask for clarification. When you say they bought it, you mean you make an offer to purchase subject to be able to get the conditional use permit. So is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm suggesting is very easily done. Or you can take the risk and say, well, we'll go forward and we'll get it. We can read this and we can handle...
I just wanted...
Yeah.
Because you talked about past tense. I'm sorry.
Continue. And I'm addressing part of that. That's the mechanics of how you might structure that deal if you wanted to, you know, sort of manage your risk as the buyer.
So there's nothing you can do with it until you get the conditional use. I just want to be clear in my mind what it is I can do with this parcel without getting a conditional use permit.
I think what you can do is what the club did. They got it. They hunted. They were on the property. They were using it for passive uses, incidental uses, if you will, accessory uses to what sort of is commonly understood a rural property can be used for. And I think it's important, too, to understand that when we deal with zoning, I think we can put a blanket over a property and say this is a conservancy area. But mostly we're dealing with how we use the property as we improve it. So I think it's a bit of a straw man to come and say, oh, geez, we can't step foot on our property or they're going to cite us. And that didn't happen. I mean, the club was using it. So I think if we want to get theoretical, I mean, they may make that argument. But I think there are incidental and accessory uses that inure to a piece of property that allow it to be, occupied and walked upon and sort of possessed.
Mr. Sincotta, give us an example of how they could have used this property without getting a conditional use permit.
I think if the owners went onto the property and assuming that it complies with the rest of with the other ordinances of the city in terms of camping and overnight staying, they could have had families out there camping. They could have hunted as they did on their private property. Those are two very good uses. I think there was a case that dealt with guns. I think that requires a separate permit. That might have been a bit of a noise situation.
This was a facial attack.
It is, yes.
And not a as applied. So facially, the argument is that if you only allow use with conditional use, then it's a violation of substantive due process. So your answer is, no, you can use it without conditional use permit. That's part of your answer.
Part of it is, yeah.
Okay. Second part of your answer is you can apply for a conditional use permit. And I suppose if they, the town would not let you use this property for anything, that might be a taking. Or that this is unconstitutional as applied.
I think that's the prop. That's a framework that I think this case may. Well, I don't think it would have ended there, but that's probably the better framework and the better posture for your for the court. I think they didn't exhaust the remedies. We're dealing with a facial challenge, but we really haven't gone through the process.
Okay. So if there's anything that could any scenario that would work under this ordinance, then it's not facially unconstitutional. I mean, that's the general rule, as I understand it.
I think that's right. This is, again, I mean, and I don't want to minimize this. I think I want to get into the issues and address it, but and I don't want to leave this aside. This is a legislative body that makes this decision, and they delegate to the Plan Commission the ability to pass on and review the initial application. But we're dealing with power that's well-established for municipalities. Issuing permits of this sort, and the presumptions are really all in their favor, that we should construe this in a way to find it constitutional if possible, and the lack of the as-applied problem makes it kind of an interesting posture. We're dealing with a facial challenge to the ordinance, but I think that's correct. If we can understand a way to apply under this ordinance and get a conditional use permit, I think it's constitutional unless they go back and the town says, we're not going to let you do anything. And that's they already didn't say that. They already were going to allow them a couple days of operation, the whole day, I mean, eight-hour days.
Mr. Sincotta, let me go to the ordinance itself, and maybe you can explain to me what this means. It says there are no permitted uses in the B2 district except that those uses permitted in the agricultural land districts A1, A2, and A3 may be authorized in conjunction with any conditional uses by express reference in the issued conditional use permit. Now, that seems to say you can't use it for anything unless you get a conditional use permit. Then you may be able to use it tied into A1, A2, and A3. What, am I misreading that?
Not fully. There's a second subsection of B2. It's on page 18 of my brief, of our brief, that actually just more conventionally lists conditional uses that are allowed. And so that the latter language in sub A is a bit confusing. The first two lines are, you're correct. It says no permitted uses except those uses permitted in agricultural land and as a conditional use. Sub B is the following conditional uses may be authorized in B2 pursuant to provision section 4.09. You're correct to say that there is you need a conditional use permit to put the property to a conventional zoning use, ATV clubs. You need that permit. The case really is about how do we get that permit? Are the standards adequate and reasonable enough to allow a landowner to come in and say, here's my information. Please give me a conditional use permit.
Well, where does it say you can use it for camping or hunting or whatever without having a conditional use permit?
It doesn't say that. I'm suggesting that it's sort of latent in the property rights of the individual are the ability to use the property for those passive uses that are, if you will, accessory uses to it being a rural parcel. And I would say accessory uses to the B2 uses.
Could you build a house on it?
No, that's a residential use. You'd have to get, in fact, it's a good point. You need a building permit to build a house.
Yeah, but you couldn't build one. It's not a permitted use anyway, is it?
No, you couldn't build a house unless you got a variance in this case, because this zone is not allowed for residential. And that brings up another point. The town, you know, pretty carefully thought through carving out about five or six areas of the town where this district would apply. And it deals with, you know, offensive industries, if you will, and I'd like to list those out and then bring up a point which I think highlights the issue. In the appendix at page 822, the conditional uses that the town has said would be appropriate for this district are fabrication of consumer or industrial commodities, garbage and rubbish disposal, quarrying, mining, salvage yards, stockyards, and they added off-road vehicle parks. What I'd like the court to think about is this: if there's a concern that this language, no permitted uses except conditional uses, and then I got to get a permit. I can't use it if I don't get a permit. The underlying concern is, I don't want to be subject to the whims of this board, if that is a concern. Frankly, I think the town proceeded very thoughtfully here. But how does a municipality react to a decision by the court that says, somewhat superficially, well, it said no permitted uses, so flunk that ordinance and go back and make a new one? Well, if our vision is a municipality that is sort of hostile and wants to, get at these people, and you're not from here, so I'm going to make it tougher on you. What they'll do, perhaps, is just say, all right, we're going to have one express use. We're going to have the garbage disposal use as the use that you can do without getting a permit. So then if you're a buyer, you can say, okay, I can use it for garbage disposal. Well, that's not a real common use. Not everyone wants to buy property for that. Frankly, it's a way to avoid having it used at all in some fashion. It's a way to game the ordinances a bit. You put one express use in, and you make all the rest conditional.
You make that argument in your brief. Your argument in the brief is they could put nature camps and allow that as a
sure.
Almost a subterfuge. I've read that argument. I want to take us back to the facial challenge and look at the language. Permitted uses. B2 sub A. I'm reading from page 18 of your brief, but it's set forth other places too. There are no permitted uses in B2 district, except, as I was reading that, I thought, okay, except means there must be some permitted uses. I mean, as an example, no justices are going to eat lunch today, except, of course, Justice Butler. So, and I ask, okay, query. Are no justices going to eat lunch? No. The rest of us, there's an except. What does the word except mean? So this says no permitted uses except those permitted in agricultural districts A1, A2, and A3. What's permitted in agricultural districts A1, A2, and A3?
I don't know the full list. I mean, agricultural uses are, I think, obviously. I think some of these overlap. There's mining uses allowed with some permit. Residential uses can be allowed, I think, under an exception. There's a number of uses in the agricultural district that are similar to the ones that are listed in sub B and are the conventional uses often that we find in that type of district.
Now, I haven't finished because it says except, those permitted in the agricultural land districts A1, A2, and A3 may be authorized in conjunction with any conditional uses. And then B sets forth conditional uses. What does that language mean?
I think it's a way, and perhaps a confusing way in some fashion, to expand the number of uses that could be allowed in conjunction with the sub B uses. So there's a whole other list. So I mean, it's actually, it helps our case. There's even more that are out there that you could get in conjunction with these other ones, but always under the conditional use permit. I think we do face that in our brief, and we make that argument. The nature of the conditional use permit is the issue here. It's characterized as an allowed use or even an approved use in the cases, the Delta case, the Skelly case. I cited a federal case as well.
Is this form of the ordinance usual? I mean, is it part of the model town or village zoning ordinances?
My amicus, who can't be here, could comment more on the model issue. I think it is, in the briefing, as we've seen, it's a fairly...
standard or not?
Somewhat standard and commonly used. I think the amicus counties association brief includes 7 or 8 or 9 as a sample ordinances that have even stronger language. Frankly, they don't have the exception language, some of them. So it is used. Obviously, that brings up the impact of a decision here. What it brings up to me, I think, is a way to, I think, challenge, frankly, the club and their council. This has been going on. This ordinance has existed since 1984. Many of these have been of long standing.
How many conditional use permits have you granted?
Under this ordinance? I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
Any?
Yes, I believe we have. Yeah. I mean, at least a couple a year. So, they're not...
conditional use permit cover all the vacant... Does it cover every piece of vacant land in the town?
No, this is the B2 district, so it's
the B2 district isn't the only vacant land in town.
The only unimproved land. No, I don't think it is, no. There's B1, which is a more general commercial district. The club actually asked to be rezoned to B1, which is has a little more flexibility in what you do there, more express uses. The town didn't want to do that because their plan was to keep these types of uses in the B2. So I going back, the idea that because it's you're required to get a permit somehow, you don't have an express use or a use of right. And I think that is not correct and not the proper way to look at this. You need a building permit in any event. This is very similar, and I want to liken what they're seeking in some ways to a building permit. It is not ministerial, if you will. I think a building permit is closer to that type of a decision. But a conditional use permit there's a presumption, there's a bias in favor of granting these because they're looked upon as being allowed. They're allowed in the district. You just need to come forward and apply with some materials, give them information, which is properly put out in the ordinance, 4.09. Give them a map, explain what you're going to do, and then come to the Plan Commission and discuss some conditions. The whole nature of a conditional use permit is to allow flexibility. There has to be a case-by-case approach here. We can't expect municipalities to go back after this case and say, my gosh, we got to think of every use and have a check-the-box list for every conditional use we want to have.
Well, let me, in my mind, focus for me the issue. I'm looking at the city of Delafield, Appendix 206, County's Association brief. Conditional uses. There are no uses permitted by right in this zoning district. Is it unconstitutional to have a zoning district where there are no uses permitted by right? Is it facially unconstitutional?
Well, I would not answer that directly, but I think yes. If there wasn't a way to use the property through some process, it's confiscates taking the property. So we're going to blanket this and say you can't.
Then unless, I don't understand your argument.
Did you just shift from facial to as applied, counsel?
I think we did.
Well, the question was facial. The question was, read the Delafield ordinance, mm-hmm. It says no, there are no uses permitted by right in this zoning district. Is that facially unconstitutional? I think that was the question.
Well, I would pull back then. I would say no. I think that you still have to look through the rest of the ordinance, and you have to go forward and seek to get permission to use the property as you desire.
Well, then you get to the second issue in this case, that you say you have to go forward. The second issue in the case is that there are no standards for the town to decide whether to grant the conditional use permit.
Well, that's what's been argued.
By whim and arbitrary and therefore invalid.
No, and we would disagree with that. There are standards, and they're incorporated. They're from the ordinance section 4.01, and the appendix on my appendix in the brief in chief at A118. Now, the Court of Appeals minimized these, which is easy to do because they're of necessity. They're drawn somewhat broadly in terms of their language. But they're concrete enough to inform a property owner what they need to come forward with in explaining why they want a conditional use permit. So there are plenty of standards. There's absolutely standards. And to describe this case as no standards or complete discretion, and no, that's just not accurate.
So you think your standards are as good as the purpose and intent of the Delafield ordinance in section 1702 and 1703? That's a page A206, because it just says its standards are the purpose and intent of the zoning ordinance. And in particular, address traffic, urban services, emergency services.
Mm-hmm. And you're at A206?
Yep.
Right. I mean, yes, I believe it's... If you had an as-applied challenge and you had someone go through and they could not, in genuine way, comply with these requirements, you might have an as-applied problem. But on a facial... This is less clear than ours. But I still think it survives. That is the Delafield ordinance, because it does contain some of the same standards. Those standards are what the legislature has set out as what zoning is all about. And I must add quickly, I want to raise, if I can, the distinction here between, we're talking about conditional uses. These are long-standing, well-established permits. They're different than variances. Variances, you can't do it unless you get a variance. Conditional uses are, you can do it as long as you come forward and get some conditions. This case is captioned the town of Rhine, but and the court recently addressed this this town of West Point case. And I just wanted to, if it's helpful, explain what I think is a major difference here. We're dealing with the constitutionality of conditional use permit ordinances. That case dealt with a moratoria, and I want to emphasize the long-standing nature of conditional use permits, and that towns are not anything but equivalent to cities in granting these. This town has adopted village powers, and I don't think we'll get any dispute on that, that this is about conditional use permits. And it's not about the statutory differences, if they exist, between towns, villages, and cities. This could be the City of Rhine case. So I did want to make that point, if it's helpful. My light is on, so I'll reserve my time.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Attorney Michael Lambert, representing Brock O'Bizzell and others.
Thank you, Your Honors. If it pleases the court, my name is Mike Lambert. I represent the Manitowoc Area OHV Club and the five individual defendants listed on the caption of this case. On October 10th of 2004, we had the five individual defendants were riding their ATVs, and we had one motorbike on that day, were riding it on their club property in the town of Rhine. The officer came out that day and cited each of the individuals for creating a public nuisance. That was the citation given. The officer had testified at the trial that he did not feel that the individuals riding that day were overly loud or annoying. However, he was instructed by the town fathers to issue the citations, and that's what he had done. The town subsequently also began litigation against the town, trying to preclude them from using their ATVs on the property at any time, indicating that it violated the B2 zoning ordinance. As the court has noted, there are no permitted uses under the B2 zoning ordinance, and that is what the respondents have taken issue with. On its face, there are no allowable uses of any kind.
Counsel, I want to, because that's, for me, a real important issue, how to interpret this facial challenge. The county's association argues at page 5 of its brief that, no, there are permitted uses, if I recall. Let me just see. It says that conditional uses are, in fact, permitted uses that simply require a permit to become permissive. And I thought about that, and I thought, conditional uses are permitted uses. And then I look at its appendix A210. And here I'm looking at the city of Glendale, and I'll give you a moment to take a look at that.
Set, thank you.
Do you have that, Council, in front of you, A210? And I'm looking at the very bottom, sub 2. And my question is this. Is the way that it is stated in sub 2 in substance what we have in this case? Counties Association would assert that it is. It says in sub 2, the following uses are permitted upon issuance of a conditional use permit. In other words, it turns the phrase a bit differently. There are no permitted uses except some conditional use permits, as we have in our facial challenge. Or here, there are permitted uses upon the issuance of a conditional use permit. So I ask this question because you made the statement there are no permitted uses, and I'm offering the argument of the county in its brief and ask you to respond to it.
It's interesting that you pick that ordinance because I have that particular section highlighted. It talks about the fact that under the procedure, you have to follow it under the procedures specified in section 13.1.6 through 13.1.66 of the zoning ordinance. We don't have that. And that, I think, is one of the important distinctions.
Now, just a minute. You're going to the next question in terms of procedures. You know, in other words, are there fair notice of criteria to set forth? But I'm on the first question, whether, not the second question, and do you know what I mean by the first question and second question?
I do.
That's the way the Court of Appeals, I think, divided it up. It's like a 1 and a 1A sort of thing. So I'm on the first part of it, the language with regard to the facial challenge, not the issue of whether or not there's criteria sufficiently set forth.
Do you want him to read subsection B in that, Glendale?
He did. He had that in front of him.
I would disagree with the...
I'm sorry.
I would disagree with the assertion that a conditional use permit that may be granted is a permitted use. It is nothing more than a maybe. And when you look at the Town of Ryan's ordinance, there is nothing that requires the town board to grant a conditional use permit. And that's one of the things I think is a distinction.
I think Glendale is different. That was the question, right? Is Glendale different? Is the Glendale ordinance, other than the 13.160, is that different than the Rhine ordinance?
I think the standards...
Well, let's not talk about the standards.
In terms of there are no permitted uses, yes, that language appears in a number of the ordinances.
And it's the same as Rhine, as far as you're
concerned.
That
particular sentence is.
Yeah, because B says, due to the special importance of these areas, no uses are permitted by right. That's
correct.
The same thing in Rhine, isn't
correct.
It?
Correct.
Okay. So you don't see any difference between, at least as to that, between City of Glendale and Rhine?
As it relates to that particular sentence,
right.
I do not.
Okay.
I think there is a distinction, though, if I can go on, that there are more ascertainable standards in those ordinances, which we don't have in the Town of Rhine, that a property owner could go and look at these particular standards and decide whether or not their business is going to be allowed there. Also, I'd point out, in a lot of these particular ordinances that have been provided by the Counties Association, we have not been provided with what the standards are. So in a lot of these, I can't tell. If you look at the Town of Rhine ordinance, under 4.090 sub 4, it indicates that the Town Planning Commission has to review the quote-unquote standards of section 4.01 in deciding whether or not the conditional use applicant and the request comes within the confines of those standards, as vague as they may be. But if you then look at 4.09 sub 5, there is no similar constraint for the town board. The town board actually makes the decision. The town planning commission simply recommends the action to be taken.
Under 4.09 sub 5, the town board is not constrained to review or to decide whether to grant the conditional use permit in accordance with those intents and purposes. They simply have unfettered discretion as to whether to grant the permit or not. And that is a real concern I have. They simply can look at this and decide yes or no. There's no standards. There's nothing that would allow an aggrieved party to take this before a judicial review board and say, we have been aggrieved. They did not follow the ordinance, because the ordinance simply indicates they may.
They had standards. Let's say, assuming they have standards, I'm not meaning to decide it by my question, but assuming that there are standards sufficient, is the language of the ordinance, assuming that there are standards sufficient, is it okay? How's that for a legal term? Is it okay to say that the permitted uses are conditional, are such and such, which are conditioned upon obtaining a permit?
By itself, no. I think you'd need one other step, that being, if you meet this criteria, then you shall be granted a conditional use permit. Similar to the building code statutes, the building codes outline all sorts of criteria that you need to submit to the municipality. And that statute states, if all those criteria are met, then you will get a building permit. So I think under that scenario, it would uphold constitutional muster. Without that, to indicate you have standards, but it's discretionary with the town or the municipality, I have concerns that that still is not a permitted use. The zoning ordinances have to allow reasonable uses of the property. This does not. There's been discussion that there are allowable uses, that you can go camping on the property, that you can go hiking. That is not what the ordinance says. 4.01 of the ordinance specifically states that the town of Rhine has the ability to govern recreational activities. Now, recreational activities has been defined very broadly by this court and other courts in such things as recreational immunity statutes. It would include hiking and hunting and so forth. So if we include all that, those are not permitted in this particular zone. Council has indicated that that's an accessory use. My question is, accessory to what? There are no permitted uses in this particular zone. There are no conditional use permits granted. So under the terms of the ordinance, not only can we not put up a building or use a business, there are no recreational pursuits that would be allowed.
Let me ask this. With regard to permitted uses, again, the facial challenge, and I happen to be looking on page 18 of your opposing counsel's brief, but I'm looking at the language of B2. If it said, permitted use is that of a camping facility. You know, I think of these places where you can camp and, you know, bring your family, and some are private. Permitted use is a camping facility or a nature park. And then it went on to say what it says. There are no, then I put other permitted uses except. Does that pass, in your mind, a facial challenge, that it would be constitutional beyond a reasonable, I mean, that it, a facial challenge.
I personally don't think so. I think that's still too restrictive. There's not a need to invoke a restriction that is that restrictive for the property. The police powers of the town of Rhine don't require something that restrictive.
But your argument is that there is no use as of right. And if I gave you a use as of right, even if it's a straw person, you know, in other words, come on, you know, a nature camp. You know, but as to a facial challenge, if it said permitted use : nature camp, and then the rest of the sentence, the rest of the ordinance as is, except with there are no other permitted uses. Does that pass a facial challenge, or does it not pass a facial challenge?
I think it certainly helps, but if it is the straw man example, I don't think that that is sufficient.
Why not? Your argument is, and I'm pushing you on this because I need to know how far your argument goes. Your argument is there are no permitted uses.
Correct. And we're way over here. So I think clearly this is unconstitutional. Now, as we inch closer to the middle, I think if the town can put forth some objective reasons why it needs to have the zoning as restrictive as it is, that there are legitimate police power reasons for that type of enforcement, then facially it would be constitutional. But if you use the straw man example, I don't think that they've come far enough.
Well, I mean, the reasons are pretty darn broad under the authorizing statute. I mean, you know, isn't it for the health and public safety and little apple pie? And you know, so I'm not sure that's all that tough.
Yeah, you could put anything under those classifications and justify it. And that's one of the concerns I have. How would you challenge a decision by the town board based on those vague standards? But I hope I've answered the court's question. I think it would make for a better argument, but if it's a straw man type of use, I think that they have to allow some reasonable uses of the property.
I'm going to ask the question somewhat differently. The ordinance says there is no, just like the Glendale does, and just as this really does, but not in these precise words, there are no permitted uses in this district as of right. The plan commission, okay, period. Regardless of what comes afterwards, okay, I'm going to give you great standards. I'm going to give you a review with standards that discretion is limited in giving the conditional use permit, okay? You can draft it. Best draft there is. Is that constitutional?
Maybe. If there are some rights to
establish
it. Well,
I'm trying to figure out what your argument is. And I think that's what Justice Bradley is trying to...
Because your answer should have been no to that question.
Yes.
But if there are ways...
If you read your brief, when you start reading your brief, the answer is no to that question. But when you continue with it with certain sentences thereafter, the answer is yes. So... I'm telling you, I'm going to draft the finest, best, discretion-limited possible ordinance, but it will be a district which has only CUBs, conditional use permit uses. Is that constitutional? Or is your argument none of these, not Glendale, none of these are any good?
I was applying my argument to the facts of our case, and I think the fact that there are no permitted...
And that, but we're asking a different question.
All right. If there are no permitted uses, there are some significant constitutional concerns. If you're asking me, are there then conditional use permits that one could get as a matter of right, that if certain standards are met, they have the right to that permit?
Absolutely. Otherwise, it's an erroneous exercise of discretion. You meet the standards, you get your conditional use permit, but you got to meet the standards. The standards are reasonable, and they're reasonably applied.
I think under that case that would be a constitutional.
That is constitutional. Okay. So that your objection to the constitutionality of the town of Rhine is not that there are no permitted uses without as of right, as I understand it. Your objection is there are no standards.
My objection is there's no permitted rights and no rights that you can get as a matter of law.
So your standard argument is really an expansion of what a conditional use means. So if you had standards and you fulfilled every standard and then you had a right to that conditional use, essentially you've redefined the statute to include uses of right, just what you have to do in order to get to that level, right?
Because now there are reasonable uses that would be allowed.
Correct.
That have to be allowed. And I think that's the bar that we need to look at.
It's still discretionary. You still have discretion in interpreting and applying these standards, but it's just like you do in all zoning cases.
Or building permit
cases. Or building permits. Sure. I mean, you know, you get it because whoever is administering interprets that, and then it looks at your application, it looks at your plans and says they fit. But still, there's judgment in there, right?
Correct. But judgment and standards sufficient that a governing body or a judicial court
review.
Could review
certainly.
It.
Okay. And if that's what you had here, this would be okay.
I believe so.
And you just don't have that, right? What kind of standards would you want in this ordinance?
I think some of the standards outlined, for instance, in the town of Delafield, or the city of Delafield may be
helpful. Well, I don't know that they're in our, in the
You know, and honestly, Madam Chief Justice, I haven't thought through exactly what we should have in there. I just know they're not in there.
Okay.
And consequently, I don't think it passes the constitutional muster.
And they're just too broad in the zoning ordinance.
I think clearly. When you look at, you know, the standards enumerated, they could apply to virtually anything. You know, recognize the needs of agriculture, forestry, industry, and business in future growth. Regulate the use of structures, lands, and waters outside of shoreland areas. That really doesn't give anybody an idea as to what could or could not be used.
Those are criteria for applying, to apply to the area. There's no water, you don't apply that.
I agree. I don't think there's any standards there that you can really sink your teeth into. You know, there are no grandfathered uses. That's been argued, but under the ordinance, grandfathered uses expire after a period of 12 months. This was a gravel pit in which the use of the gravel pit operation had ceased in the mid-1980s. So by the terms of the ordinance, there are no grandfathered uses either. So I think on its face that it's deficient. I'm running out of
time. Rewritten to say the permitted use is gravel pit, and then in addition, blah, blah, blah. Would that pass constitutional muster?
I'm sorry, ma'am. Can you repeat that?
I apologize. If it were rewritten and it said a permitted use is a gravel pit, and there are no other permitted uses, however, except blah, 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 just as it's stated. Any problem with that?
It may be. Is that reasonable for the town to limit it to just a mining operation? It's closer, but I would have some concerns with a single use of the property.
On a facial challenge, you're saying that you
yes.
would have proven beyond a reasonable doubt that it's unconstitutional.
I would have concerns with that ordinance. I'd like to read to the court from a treatise on that issue, on the standards. It was in the Municipality Magazine in November 2006 edition. The article was entitled Plan Unit Development Zoning in Wisconsin. And
Wisconsin, the League of Wisconsin Municipalities Monthly.
Yes.
Okay.
And it was written by their assistant counsel, Daniel Olson.
Okay. What date? What month?
November of 2006.
Okay.
And the article had a provision called Standards for Creating a PUD, a Planned Use District. And it stated, courts have generally required that local standards be incorporated into a PUD ordinance in order to protect against arbitrary government action. One commentator notes, requiring such standards does not undercut the flexibility of PUD as a zoning tool, but rather ensures that a city council's enhanced discretion under the plan development ordinance will be guided by proper considerations, and that a benchmark for measuring the council's actions will be available in case of subsequent judicial review. In other words, because the planning board is required to exercise its discretion when making a determination of a PUD, adequate guides and standards must be established by the legislation to protect the citizenry against arbitrary and unreasonable exercise of that discretion. And that was a quote from Gail Gooder in a primer on planned unit developments in the Zoning and Planning Law Report, Volume 21, Number 3, page 20, in March of 1998. And I think that is part of the heart and soul of this. There has to be some ascertainable standards where you can go in and get that or not get that standard.
Council, I have a question regarding the other issue about whether this is a public nuisance or a private nuisance. And your brief as well, and I'm going to raise this with Mr. Sincotta when he comes up for rebuttal. You go into our cases on private, public, and whether this is public or private, and whether the town has standing. This citation was under the ordinance, the town ordinance, which defines public nuisance, right? So why do we care about case law that is not related to this citation? I mean, the County Association, which is your partner here, at least for some purposes.
The Realtors Association?
The Realtors are, but not the County Association brief, not necessarily your friends here. It takes the position, which, you know, it has appeal, that the issue is not general public nuisance law, but the issue is this ordinance and its definition.
It was interesting because that was the first time it would have been raised, and I thought it was an excellent question. To be a valid exercise of the police powers, the law must deal with an activity that threatens health or is a danger to safety or public health. That's Bowdoin v. City of Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Now, in this case, we have licensed ATVs driven by licensed drivers whose noise is regulated by the state of Wisconsin, and they're driving it on their land. I think it's an abuse of the police powers to suggest that is a violation, that they can't do that. And that, I think, is the important determination when you're looking at this as a police power violation. It doesn't rise to that level. This is a perfectly lawful activity that's being engaged in by the ATV riders. Section 823.01 states that the governments can only abate public nuisances. Now, this court has defined private and public nuisances. A private nuisance is something that simply disturbs the peace and quiet of the neighboring property. That's what we have here. So if we say, well, you can't... I see my time's up. Could I finish
my
answer?
Go ahead. Could you finish that?
Thank you. If we say that the police ordinances can come in to ensure that the neighbors have the right to the peaceful and quiet existence of their property, we've then negated 823.01, which states that only public nuisances can be abated, not private nuisances. And I think it's the distinction between a violation of a criminal-type code or a provision where there should be some penalties attached to it versus the lawful activities that need to be abated because it interferes with the quiet enjoyment.
This wasn't an abatement suit, was it?
No, I suggest that that's what it was. It was citations given to the ordinances, which would have the same effect. It was
same effect, but there's a special 2.04 here that deals with abatement.
Correct. And the trial court looked at that and said, and if you look at the rest of the ordinance, it meets this court's definition of a public nuisance. It talks about impediments to highway signs or vegetation coming on sidewalks or other public interests that are affected. But the trial court looked at this particular portion of the nuisance ordinance and said, this is not a public nuisance. This is a private nuisance and not within the jurisdiction of the town of Rhine to do.
Well, they define public nuisance as this list, but then says the enumeration shall not be construed to exclude other nuisances affecting public peace, that's noise, or safety. ATVs raise safety issues coming within the provisions of subsection 1.
They didn't give the citation for the benefit of the ATV riders. They were giving the citation because the neighbors were complaining of the noise. The ATV riders all had helmets.
And it was under 201, which is the prohibition section. And 202 is the definition section.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Kastner? Representing the Realtors Association. You filed an amicus brief.
The Realtors Association filed the amicus brief. I did not write that brief, however. Chief Justice Abrahamson, members of the court, my name is John Kastner. I am with Murphy Desmond. I appear today on behalf of the Wisconsin Realtors Association on time ceded by the defendant respondents. And I want to thank them for allowing us to appear on this important issue today. Wisconsin Realtors Association has many members, and the court is aware of that. Its concerns extend not only to people who are seeking permits, but people who live next to people who get permits. That's an important point that I want you to keep in mind in the limited amount of time I have available. Wisconsin has a large body of zoning law. The United States has a large body of zoning law. Rathkoff's, which I like to refer to and this court frequently cites, has five volumes. It occupies several feet of space in our library. Realtors Association is here today because if you uphold this ordinance as written, we can throw all of that away.
Counsel, we asked Mr. Lambert whether, if there were good standards, platinum standards, or gold if you prefer, would this ordinance be okay? And they were applied reasonably and reviewable?
If there were objective, measurable standards, they might save this ordinance.
Is it your position, is it the realtor's position that any ordinance that says no permitted use in this district, unless you get a permit?
The problem with this ordinance, as the Realtors Association sees it, is that number one, it says there are no permitted uses, and that number two, that there are no objective standards by which you can determine what to do. And the due process violation that occurs here is that it's an open invitation to be arbitrary.
Well, we agree arbitrary would be bad, and the court has so held, right?
Well,
arbitrariness is bad, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, the measure in deciding whether or not a case satisfies due process was identified by this court many years ago in State versus Bessent, which is cited in the association's brief. And in a fairly short period of space, on pages 545 and 546, the court identified the clash, the constitutional clash that we're dealing with here. It starts by noting that the concept of public welfare is broad and inclusive and embraces in comprehensive zoning the orderliness of community growth, land value, and aesthetic objectives. Those are all things the Realtors Association cares about protecting. But it goes on to say a restriction or use may be unreasonable because it must be said the property owner ought not bear so great a burden, or more importantly, such burden is not commensurate with the benefit to the public. That's the important part of this. What we're afraid of is that every municipal attorney in the state of Wisconsin, if you uphold this ordinance, is going to adopt zoning ordinances that have no permitted uses. Municipal lawyers are hired by regulators who want to regulate, and they don't really appreciate being fettered by the constitutional limitations that only you uphold.
Counsel, would this pass a constitutionally facial challenge if the ordinance said there's a permitted use of a quarry, in addition, blah, 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 than the exact words. Does that pass the constitutional challenge that it's facially invalid?
The answer to that question is more complicated than the 7 minutes I have available to me provides.
How about 30 seconds, though?
let me try to explain. There are a lot of issues that go to whether or not an ordinance is facially acceptable. In this instance, one of the questions that you have to ask is, was this quarry depleted 20 years ago? Telling these property owners that their only use is to use the property as a quarry when that's not economically beneficial or productive use? What good is it to have the right to engage in a quarry that won't work?
You pick a use that is beneficial, can be done for this property. Justice Bradley picked quarry. Do you have any sentimental value for quarry?
I happen to have one right next to my house, so it is quite sentimental. But let's take one that's right out of the conditional use then. That is, it can be used for salvage yards for wood, metal, paper, clothing, or stockyards.
Certainly that would be if that were technically or practically feasible and economically beneficial or productive use. And that would satisfy the requirement that there be a permitted use. The constitutional problem is the discretion that you grant to a municipal body. They have one zoning district in which there are no permitted uses, but there would be nothing stopping other municipalities, if you uphold this ordinance, taking all of the permitted uses out of all of the districts and stating that everything is a conditional use, and then saying that the standards as to whether you're going to grant that use or not are whether or not it satisfies the health, safety, and welfare. They have carte blanche to do whatever they want. There could be no credible challenge to an approval or a denial. There's no standards by which you can attack something that's as nebulous as protecting the health, safety, and welfare of the community.
What would you suggest as a standard?
We believe that planning, if you go back to the case that created zoning in Wisconsin, which was State Ex Rel Carter versus Harper, the court recognized that zoning exists for a reason. People want to be able to know that if they move into a neighborhood, that it's going to be a neighborhood that's suitable for residential use. If they move a business into a neighborhood, they want to know that it's suitable for business use, for their business. And the whole point of zoning is to give people some degree of comfort that when they buy a property, they'll be able to engage in the use that they want to engage in, and that somebody else won't be able to come in and do something so awful that they want to move. And an ordinance that has no permitted use provides no comfort to the people that move into the neighborhood, what's going to be there tomorrow, and it provides no assurance to the person that buys the property that he's going to be able to engage in the use that he wants. This represents either a failure to plan, an unwillingness to plan, or a desire to be arbitrary. And none of those are valid public purposes. If you have to measure the benefit to the public, and those are the only benefits that an ordinance that permits nothing affords, is flexibility to the extent that they have the total right to be arbitrary. That's not a legitimate public purpose, but the burden on the property owner that needs to comply is insurmountable. He has to go through a lengthy process, and he doesn't know what he can do, and all he knows is that somehow when he's done, he has to satisfy the health, safety, and welfare concerns, which mean nothing to them.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you.
Mr. Lambert.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Sincotta, right. You wanted more time. Sorry, Mr. Sincotta.
The nuisance issue, and we'll address that, but if I can pick up on Mr. Kastner's comments. I want to get into the details of why there is standards here, but I think that it's important to understand that the perspective on local bodies that they are intending to and will necessarily or inevitably be arbitrary is somewhat disparaging of them, and I think it's not what happened here, but also contrary to the presumptions in the law, of course. I mean, the presumptions are that people are of good faith. I mean, these are volunteers. They're going to do their best, and occasionally a cranky person up there doesn't, you know, apply things in a perhaps rational way, but that's not that's not here. Now, is there a concern? Well, yeah, you got to maintain some standards to avoid allowing for that, because in a situation you could have it. So I don't. This is not carte blanche. I mean, this is not we can do anything we want. It just isn't that hard. There are standards, and let's look at them. The appendix, section A. Page A-123. This is the town's conditional use ordinance that applies to all conditional uses. And really, we're talking about that. We're talking about conditional uses in any district because we're talking about standards. It's not like there's less, lower standards in a district that happens to have a use of right. If you look at the bottom of the appendix A-123, review and approval. First, the town plan commission shall review the site. This is sub 2. Existing and proposed structures, architectural designs or plans, neighboring uses, parking areas, driveway locations, etc. Conditions. It gives the conditions. And let me step back. Conditional use permit is you want to use it for a list of one of the lists that's allowed, and you have to come forward with information and apply. And then the next step is you meet the plan commission, and they say, okay, that's the use generally. What conditions should we put on? They're listed here. Landscaping, architectural design, type of construction, lighting, fencing, planning, hours of operation. I'm a practitioner that primarily represents private property owners. This is more than is in many ordinances. I'm happy to apply and list out the conditions that I would like to see applied to my use based on this list. So to say there are no conditions is not accurate. And these are pretty concrete. If we go to the next page, Appendix 8-1-2.
Council, if I can back up a second. And I just want to make sure I'm following your argument. Conditions apply to your use. And I think the question, at least the focus of the question as I understand it, is at this point in time, until it's been authorized or until it's been granted, there is no use.
The uses are listed, and you come in forward and you say, I want to use it for this, and here's the conditions that I'm willing to play on. I think you're correct. Until the approval comes, there is
until the approval, yeah. There is no permitted use. I think that's the focus of the issue, as I understand it.
Right. And how do you get to the approval? And I'm trying to suggest that there is a concrete pathway that is part of having proper standards. You know what you have to provide. And the Plan Commission is somewhat limited in the conditions that it can impose. If you turn the page and you go to sub 3, this is 4.09 sub 3, the hearing on the conditional use application shall be conducted in accordance with Section 6811 sub 2. Chapter 68, the court's aware, is the sort of the general municipal statute that guarantees due process. That provision in particular allows for subpoenaing witnesses and cross-examination. I don't know that it's actually applied as much as it perhaps should be, but that's a pretty significant process for that particular hearing. Now, what are the references that the Plan Commission uses to determine whether the conditions that have been put forward by me, say, or Mr. Lambert, are sufficient? Well, then you go to 4.01, and you have the purpose and intent. And these are more specific, frankly, than are in the zoning ordinance, the enabling statute itself. There's a list here of necessity, because they're trying to address a number of different situations. Many of these will not apply to a particular case, but they are plenty concrete enough for me as a practitioner and for a landowner to come in and say, well, this one really doesn't apply. We're fine here. We're stabilizing property values because we're going to do such and such. We understand the need for this growth. This is an appropriate land use because it is somewhat rural. It forces, frankly, the property owner to address his neighbors. And let's get to that quickly. The neighbors are property owners, too. What Mr. Castor said is exactly right. They were there first. The zoning exists, B2. You need a conditional use permit. Now, they're operating under the assumption that that's appropriate. Then you come in, the club comes in and says, we're not even going to get one. We're just going to do what we want. So the property owners, the adjacent neighbors, their rights are being affected. They don't have the ability to rely on that use. I'm running out of time here.
You have run out of time.
Just notice. Pardon me. So, am I done?
One short sentence.
Chief Justice, you are correct about the nuisance issue. This is a decision they made, and it's one they can make. And you do not need to have the court getting into deciding whether a particular subject matter is a public nuisance or not. That's not what the cases require. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I want to thank all the counsel, Mr. Sincotta, Mr. Lambert, and Mr. Castor for their excellent briefs and arguments today on yet another land use case. In property interests and values and rights are, as you know, very important to us as individuals and the court. That concludes our argument in 06AP450, Town of Rhine versus Brock O. Bizzle et al. And we will take a few moments recess so these students may leave if they wish, and our next group of students may enter the courtroom. We are in recess.